It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Hello, hello. Welcome, one and all. It's April 20th, 2021. Oh boy, it is the stoner holiday of 420 in the United States, so maybe all around the world, but lots of people who enjoy marijuana are celebrating their butts off today. And so just, I hope you have a safe and happy 420 if you are. So I'm doing the show early. I'm recording this at, 10 o'clock my time. So we'll be ready. So let's get started the way we always start.
World news.
That's right, with the world news. Alrighty. Let's get going. All right. First up, Chad's president, Idriss Deby, has died visiting frontline troops. Chad's longtime president, Idriss Deby, has died of wounds suffered on the front line in the country's north, where he'd gone to visit soldiers battling rebels. Deby, he was 68, has just breathed his last defending the sovereign nation on the battlefield over the weekend, Army spokesman General Azim Bermondoa Agona said in a statement read out on state television on Tuesday, a day after Deby was declared the winner of a presidential election. The exact circumstances of his death were not immediately clear. The Army said the president had been commanding his army at the weekend as it battled rebels who had launched a major incursion into the north of the country on election day of April 11th. Agona also said a military council led by the late president's 37-year-old son, four-star general Mahamat Idriss Deby, would replace him. What? That's so weird. A curfew has been imposed and the country's borders have been shut in the wake of the president's death. So anyway, it's very strange that they just had this election. There were a whole bunch of people vying for it, and his son is going to just replace him. This is strange to me. Al Jazeera's Hiba Morgan, reporting from the capital of Najima, said the establishment of the military council is not in Chad's constitution. What the constitution says is that in the absence of the president, or in case he dies, then the speaker of the parliament takes charge of the country for 40 days, so a transition is put in place until elections are held. But the military announced that the Legislative Assembly has been dissolved and that the Constitution also has been dissolved, so what they are doing is that they replace the Constitution with their own set of rules. French President Emmanuel Macron's office said it had taken note of the creation of the interim military body, urging a quick return to civilian rule and a peaceful transition. France lost a brave friend, Macron's office said. It expresses its strong attachment to Chad's stability and territorial integrity. The shock announcement came a day after Deby, who came to power in rebellion in 1990, won a sixth term. Original results released on Monday showed he'd taken 79.3% of the vote. So this will be very interesting to see how this plays out in Chad. I don't like any military rule. It's always ends bad for the people. At least as any case I know of. What do we have here? The government had sought on Monday to assure concerned residents that the offensive was over. There had been panic in some areas on Monday after tanks were deployed along the city's main roads, an AFP journalist reported. The tanks were later withdrawn, apart from a perimeter around the president's office, which is under heavy security during normal times. The establishment of a security deployment in certain areas of the capital seems to have been misunderstood. There's no particular threat to fear. However, the U.S. Embassy in N'Djamena on Saturday had ordered non-essential personnel to leave the country, warning of possible violence in the capital. Britain also urged its nationals to leave. France's embassy said in an advisory to its nationals in Chad that the deployment was a precaution. There is no specific threat. So we'll see what happens there. It's funny because Africa news normally doesn't make it out of like the back pages, but I saw it on the front page of a few news sites, so you might have heard that story already. This comes to us from The Guardian. Police killing hundreds in Rio de Janeiro despite court ban on favela raids. Nearly 800 people were killed by police in the Brazilian state of Rio de Janeiro in the past 9 months, as raids remain a terrifying routine for favela families, despite a Supreme Court ruling to halt incursions during the coronavirus pandemic. New figures show that between June 2020 and March 2021, 797 people were killed in Rio State, 85% in the city of Rio and surrounding metropolitan region. The court ruled to suspend police raids in Brazilian favelas in June 2020 amid public outcry following the death of a 14-year-old who was shot in the back during a police incursion. Between June and September, police raids plummeted 64% compared with the average for the same period in previous years. But incursions resumed in October, 1 month after the acting governor, Cláudio Castro, took office and rapidly doubled to 38 in October, compared with the previous month. In the following 9 months, the communities of Greater Rio saw an average of nearly one raid every day. It's absurd, Daniel Herta, an author of the report and professor of sociology at UFF, said. The highest court takes a decision and political authorities do not respect it, violate it deliberately. This is a risk to the rule of law in Brazil. There's a lot of death. The current wave of violence began when police launched an incursion to set up an outpost in a community in Belford Roxo, sparking retaliation from gangs. Since then, the sound of police helicopters is constant, and shootings break out day and night. Friend Sergio Goulart, the head of a local activist group, said that while official figures said 9 people had been killed in the community, local residents say that more than 30 have been shot since January. One case that shocked me was that of a young man who was shot dead going home from work. His mother spent hours with her son on her lap waiting for the body to be taken away. The whole family left the community afterwards, she said. So yeah, it's a lot of tragic violence and death going on there. Russia's planning its own space station in 2025. As tensions simmer between Russia and the number of Western countries on the ground, that of Russia's space agency has announced work has begun on a space station of its own. The International Space Station was launched in 1998 by the Russian and U.S. space agencies and has been hailed for its exemplary cooperation involving numerous countries. But Russian officials have indicated they could pull out of the ISS in 2025. The station's structure is aging. Russia's Roscosmos Space Agency said its agreement with international partners runs out in 2024. A decision on the ISS future will then be made on the condition of its technical modules, which have reached the end of their service life, and on Russia's plans for its own orbital service station. We can't risk the lives of our cosmonaut. The situation that today is connected to the structure and the metal getting old, it can lead to irreversible consequences, to catastrophe. We mustn't let that happen, Deputy Prime Minister Yuri Borisov was quoted as telling state TV. Moscow would give its international partners fair warning of our departure from the ISS in 2025, he added. Appearing to preempt that decision, the head of Roscosmos, Dmitry Rogozin, posted a video on the Telegram messaging app adding that the first core module of the new Russian orbital space station is in the works, with the aim of having it ready for launch in 2025. Russia would construct the new space station by itself, he said, while appearing to hold out the possibility of other countries taking part. We'll definitely take partners, but we'll manage by ourselves, he told Russia One TV. Last month, it said it had signed an agreement with China's National Space Administration to develop a lunar research station on the surface of the moon in orbit or both. This is pretty cool. I think any new space station is pretty dang cool. Unprovoked escalation? What? How is this possible? Oh, the U.S. is involved. U.S. slams Russian plan to block Black Sea. The U.S. State Department has branded an unprovoked escalation, reported Russian plans to block parts of the Black Sea, which could ultimately impact access to Ukrainian ports amid heightened tensions over Moscow's military maneuvers. The U.S. and its European allies have expressed concerns regarding Russia's military buildup in recent weeks and fear Moscow might be planning to invade Ukraine. Russia, which backed separatists in eastern Ukraine, annexed Crimea in 2014. Russia state media have reported that Moscow intends to close parts of the Black Sea to foreign military and official ships for 6 months, which could affect access to Ukrainian ports in the Sea of Azov, which is connected to the Black Sea through the Kerch Strait. On Tuesday, more than 20 Russian warships took part in military exercises in the Black Sea. Russia has temporarily restricted the movement of foreign warships and what it called other state ships near Crimea. This represents yet another unprovoked escalation, State Department spokesman Ned Price said in a statement. So, it's growing. The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration on Monday urged airlines to exercise extreme caution when flying near the Ukraine-Russian border, citing potential flight safety risks. EU's top diplomat, Joseph Borrell, said on Monday more than 100,000 troops have amassed on the border in Ukraine's border with and in annexed Crimea. He said no new economic sanctions or expulsion of diplomats were planned for the time being. Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba, after addressing EU foreign ministers, called on the EU to impose new sanctions. So, a lot to unpack there. I learned something listening to the radio the other day. I heard them, they didn't call them Karen people, they said the Karen people, which I guess might be the right way to say it. I'm not sure. So if you know, speak up and calm. And I guess since I'm talking about Calm, Calm is a non-radio chat room on SDF. Anonradio.net is what you're listening to now, and it's powered by SDF, a public access Unix system. All you have to do is SSH over as new at SDF.org to sign up for an account, and you'll get a shell account. It's pretty great, and one of the features you get is Calm. It's a chat program. Just type COM, hit enter, press G for go to, and type Anonradio, all lowercase. You're in the chat room. You can talk to people. Anonradio is the room where we're talking about what's going on the radio, usually. And right now, it's news to me with Marcus, DJ Marcus. But at 19:30 UTC, every single day, you get the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. And it's a fantastic show. It's a lot of fun. Sometimes it doesn't make sense, but if you just go with it for a couple of shows, it all comes together, and it's just a blast. So anyway, I just wanted to be sure and let you guys know about that. All right. Unrest continues in Myanmar, where more than 700 civilians have been killed since February 1st. The protest movement is developing on the political front, with opponents of the military junta announcing the formation on Friday of a national unity government, including members of Suu Kyi's ousted cabinet and representatives of the ethnic minority groups and other allies. The Karen, or Karen, I'm not sure. I'm guessing it's Karen, but you guys can tell me if I'm wrong. But the Karen National Union in the east, on the border with Thailand, has offered shelter to fleeing protesters in the territory it controls. Major General Nerda Maya, head of the Karen National Defense Organization, spoke to France 24 about the developments in Myanmar. A leader of the Karen National Liberation Army, the oldest guerrilla group still fighting in Myanmar, he described the situation in the country as very critical and called on the international community to act immediately to end the killing. He stressed that the people of Myanmar are not giving up their fight and discussed efforts to coordinate with other ethnic groups and democratic forces to bring an end to the military regime. And there's an interview that's about 10 minutes or so. If you want to watch that, over at France24.com. Whew, man, I'm glad we're making good progress. I always have too many stories, but we might actually make it today. I'm not sure.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
Well, I'll try my best. We've got a 311 song for you today because they're from Nebraska, and I've been thinking about Nebraska lately. Denmark. What may happen to Syrian refugees who refuse to return? Well, 10 years after the war in Syria broke out, Denmark is telling many Syrian refugees who sought safety in the European country to return. Around 500 Syrians have been thrust in a position of uncertainty and fear as Denmark prepares to cancel temporary residence permits of refugees who hail from Damascus and Rif Damascus areas now declared safe by Danish authorities. It's the only European country to have reached such a conclusion. I remember a lot of bad things from Syria. People died in front of me. Sagida Salim, a 19-year-old Syrian refugee living in the southern Danish city of Odense. As Danish authorities reassess the residence permits of hundreds of Syrian refugees from those safe areas, painful memories are coming back, who arrived in Denmark in 2016 with her mother and four sisters. I felt stressed, scared, and sad when I read the letter from the authorities stating that my permit will be reassessed, and I don't even know if I should continue my studies or just leave them be. Many refugees are expected to refuse to return to war-torn Syria, a decision that could see them forced into deportation facilities or departure centers. Some will inevitably try and flee to other European countries to seek asylum elsewhere. Matthias Tesfaye, the Danish Minister of Immigration and Integration, refused Al Jazeera's request for an interview but sent a written statement. The decision to reassess these resident permits was based on a conclusion on the general security situation in Damascus from the Danish Refugee Appeals Board. The conclusion of the board is that the general security situation in the area in and around Damascus has improved to such an extent that the need for protections for persons who are not individually persecuted has ceased to exist. But Denmark's controversial decision has met with domestic and international criticism. Alrighty, well, here we go. This is Long for the Flowers. Between this world and the next, I wanna look at a bit of you. Will I feel it? Or gaze at emptiness? Who guess it could be so unfinished? A never ending infernal process. Yeah, where is that bliss? The ordinary life I knew that was so exquisite.
You long for the flowers. I get more from the hours spent. Minutes that are free of dissent. A day without argument. You said you long for the flowers that you remember. A song sang from the shower.
And so there we go. I think that that album, these Don't Tread on Me, had this very distinct sound, and I kind of like it. So anyway, just to let you hear that. Now we've got some news from our friends at the World Socialist website, and then we'll talk about some technology stuff. Last Thursday, April 15th, the French National Assembly voted to approve the Macron government's Global Security Bill, which significantly expands police powers. The law has already been approved by the Senate in February. With Thursday's vote, it now comes into law. The law has triggered mass protests since it was first placed before the National Assembly in November last year. Its centerpiece, Article 24, restricts the rights of the population to film the police. While presented in the name of defending police from targeted attacks, its clear aim is to provide police who are regularly filmed engaged in violent attacks on protesters and workers with impunity to violently assault the population by preventing the population from filming them. In the face of protests of tens of thousands, the Macron government had pledged to rewrite Article 24. The new version no longer explicitly mentions the sharing of images of police agents. Instead, it criminalizes any act which provokes, with the obvious aim that their physical and mental safety will be subject to attack. The identification of an agent or the national police, of the national police, military, or gendarmerie, while they are acting as part of a police operation. It carries a maximum sentence of 5 years jail and a $75,000 fine. In practice, anyone who publishes a video identifying a police agent faces the danger of being criminally prosecuted, and the onus will be placed on them to demonstrate that they did not have an obvious aim of bringing about an attack on an officer. And the article goes on to kind of go through that. But we've got the National Assembly's vote approving Macron's police state law came as the official undercounted death tally of the coronavirus in France surpassed 100,000. Mass death is the result of the policies pursued by Macron, who has refused any scientific lockdown policy that would require the closure of non-essential production. Schools and non-essential workplaces have been kept open so that workers could remain on the job, and profits continue to grow for French corporations. Alongside this death on a mass scale, the year has witnessed the further enrichment of a tiny corporate elite. Its 42 billionaires now have a combined wealth of $512 billion, after an increase of more than 66% in a single year. The French ruling class views with fear the eruption of social anger against its policies of profiteering on mass death and has built up the forces of state repression against that. The Socialist Party, the Greens, and Jean-Luc Mélenchon's unsubmissive France have all postured fraudulently as opponents of Macron's police law. The Socialist Party has announced that it will be launching a legal challenge against the entire bill. So, when it was in power under François Hollande, the Socialist Party significantly expanded police powers, including the enactment of a two-year state of emergency and the suspension of civil liberties, voted for at a time by Mélenchon's La France Insoumise. Macron's global security law expands police powers in the same direction as pursued under Holland, with La France Insoumise support. So, it's looking not looking great for France. Like, I used to thought, anyway, it's just going to be a rough time, especially with all of their anti-religious stuff they've got going on, or at least anti-Islamic religion stuff. Yeah, it'll be challenging. Well, check it out. Let's do some tech stories. We've got about 7 minutes or so to go. DuckDuckGo has a new Chrome extension to block the flock, which is a new Google tracking method. We might have talked about this shortly before. Google Chrome uses flock, or federated learning of cohorts, to provide visibility into user data to any website. To help websites recognize and target individuals, flock places each user in an ID group. To avoid this data flow, DuckDuckGo, a competitor of Google Search, has come forward with an extension for Google Chrome that can block flock tracking. The users will now have an option of using either the DuckDuckGo application or extension and entirely opt out of the flock monitoring. Flock is the alternative to third-party cookies by Google. It's based on machine learning and allows the web browser to study how users browse and then group them into cohorts with their knowledge. Without their knowledge. After this, the user will be served advertisements based on the cohort. More precisely, users will be targeted with ads, but in more anonymous manner. As claimed by Google, this was supposed to improve user privacy compared to third-party cookies. The above was claimed because Flock is based on federated learning that happens on the user's device, and this AI-based learning involves sharing less user data than third-party cookies. The new DuckDuckGo Chrome extension automatically blocks Flock activity on any website. The extension can even auto-update, ensuring the user remains secure while browsing. Those who still choose to use Google Chrome can safeguard their privacy by disabling the advertising personalization in the Google Ad setting, disabling the web and app activity, or include Chrome history and activity from sites, apps, and devices that use Google services, and remain logged out of your Google account to avoid syncing data history with Chrome if not using a sync passphrase. The users who choose to install the DuckDuckGo extension to be on the safe side in terms of data will have the option of the private search global privacy control. Oh, this is kind of what they always say. If you are a big Chrome user or if you're using Google stuff, might check that out. In Houston, there's tragedy. No one was driving. You may have seen this. The BBC, I think, picked this up today. This happened this past weekend. A Memorial Hermann doctor has been identified as one of the two men killed when the Tesla they were in crashed into a tree. The accident has made national headlines because local officials investigating the accident says no one was driving the vehicle. The crash happened at 11:25 p.m. on Friday in the Carlton Woods subdivision near the Woodlands. The car burst into flames after hitting a tree near 18 Hammock Dunes Place. Harris County Precinct 4 Constable Mark Herman told KPRC, which is the local news station, that the investigation showed no one was driving the fully electric 2019 Tesla when the accident happened. There was a person in the passenger seat of the car and in the rear passenger seat of the car. One of those men has now been identified as Dr. William Varner, a member of the Memorial Hermann Medical System. So, they're not self-driving cars. Let's see. What do we got here? Oh, there's a tweet here. Elon Musk tweet. Here we go. Your research as a private individual is better than professionals at Wall Street Journal. Data logs recovered so far show autopilot. Autopilot was not enabled, and this car did not purchase FSD. Moreover, standard autopilot would require lane lines to turn on, which the street did not have. So, basically, Tesla defending itself, saying it wasn't in a self-driving mode. So, what they were doing is anybody's guess. Authorities will perform autopsies on both men. So this is kind of interesting because I wonder what the deal is here. This is kind of weird to me. I don't like it. The FBI has been hacking into the computers of U.S. companies running insecure versions of Microsoft software in order to fix them. The operation, approved by a federal court, involved the FBI hacking into hundreds of vulnerable computers to remove malware placed there by an earlier malicious hacking campaign, with Microsoft blamed on a Chinese hacking group called Hafnium. Hafnium's operation placed backdoors into tens of thousands of servers running Microsoft Exchange software, which allows businesses to manage email content and calendar contacts and calendars. It took advantage of weakness in the servers, now fixed, to plant the malware. The FBI's campaign uses the same weakness in hundreds of servers that have still not been patched to hack the hackers. Breaking into the vulnerable computers and removing the backdoors entirely. Ooh, whoops, sorry about that. Today's court-authorized removal of the malicious web shell demonstrates the department's commitment to disrupting hacking activity using all of our legal tools, not just prosecutions. The U.S. Department of Justice Assistant Attorney General John C. Demers said, combined with the private sector's and other government agencies' efforts to date, including the release of detection tools and patches, we are together showing the strength that public-private partnership brings to our country's cybersecurity. Benevolent hacking, also called a white hat hack, is rare, particularly from state actors, but not unheard of. In 2016, a widespread weakness in Internet of Things devices led to the creation of a botnet called Mirai, which allowed criminals to seize millions of devices and direct them at websites and services, overwhelming them with traffic and crashing them. But in 2017, a computer virus named Hajime was discovered to be infecting devices through the same weakness and closing the door behind it. A message from the virus's author said they were just a white hat securing some systems. So, not really justification there. And I think it's creepy that the U.S. government would just be breaking into people's computers to fix security issues. But I mean, yeah, I guess they're going to do what they want to do. We've got just a little bit more time, so I'll try and be quick. So here we go. U.S. is investigating code testing hack that could affect thousands of companies. A recent breach has prompted fears of another SolarWinds-style hack that could have ramifications for numerous large companies. Reuters reports that federal officials are investigating a hack at CodeCove, a code testing firm with 29,000 customers that include Procter & Gamble, The Washington Post, and tech companies like Atlassian and GoDaddy. The intrusion appears to have lasted for months. CodeDev says the attackers exploited a flaw in Docker image creation process to make periodic unauthorized changes to the company's Bash uploader script, starting on January 31st. The modifications gave the hackers power to export customer info and send it to an outside server. However, CodeCove only learned of the incident on April 1st. The team refreshed its internal sign-in, set up auditing and monitoring systems, and had the hosting provider shut down the server, but it wasn't certain how many customers had been affected. So, very scary indeed. And, alright, just the last two headlines then. Neiman Lab reports people are still subscribed to newspapers because they use them to start their charcoal grills or start fires in their fireplaces, which is a bit sad if you're a newspaper writer. A black reporter was arrested during the Dante Wright protests, and they think it's racially motivated. Not really a big surprise. Really sad, though. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow, and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.